through the window, aching to join, but knowing that he would never be invited in. In fact, nobody would really notice he was there. Has that been you? Have you ever felt like you wanted to be a part of something, but there was something that was either a part of you or something that you could not change that forced you to be the person at the window looking in at people enjoying the party, wanting to join in, but knowing that you would never be a part of the group? Well, that captures, in a small way, what a leper would go through in the ancient world. The word for leprosy in Hebrew means to strike, to scourge. And sometimes, but not all the time, people saw leprosy as God's curse for sin. And sometimes God did curse people with leprosy because they sinned. Like Miriam, for example, the sister of Moses. When she was complaining about his leadership, God inflicted her with leprosy. And sometimes leprosy was a result of sin, but it was not always the case. Nevertheless, the word came to be associated with the fact of someone being struck down. And to have a severely form of leprosy was almost looked like the skin was dying. It was a highly infectious skin disease. And you could identify it by swelling, rashes, unusually bright spots. And so you could see and know who a leper was in the ancient world, because in Leviticus chapter 13, there are stipulations for how a leper is supposed to go about his or her life. You would know a leper because they would be the ones with their clothes torn. Their hair would be uncovered. Their head would be uncovered. And all day long, to prevent people from coming into close contact with them and being infected, they had to scream out in loud voices, "Unclean! Unclean!" Could you imagine doing that? That being your identity, that being what people know you for. The man standing outside the window, "Unclean! Unclean!" Leviticus chapter 13 says this about lepers: "He shall remain unclean all the days for which he has an infection. He shall live alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp." And so you were not supposed to come within 6 feet of a leper. And to prevent that, once again, their daily task was to prevent people from doing that by screaming out, "Unclean! Unclean! Unclean! Unclean!" And if you heard someone getting close to you saying, "Unclean! Unclean!" you're supposed to, the natural response would be to run away. So again, capturing that Christmas commercial. Can you imagine lepers, when they wanted to go to worship in a synagogue, there was a special room for them. This little box of a room, 6 by 6 by 10, where they could peek through the horizontal bars and look into the sanctuary and see what was going on. Now, if you were to ask someone like that, and once again, have you ever felt distant, separated from God because of something? Maybe it's because of sin. Maybe it's because things are not going your way. Maybe you sense that God is absent. But perhaps you can relate to the feeling of this man standing outside the window, wanting to join the party, watching worship from this 6 by 6 by 10 room, and the only thing that they know how to say is, "Unclean, unclean." And for these 10 men in the Gospel of Luke, what would mean everything to them? To be a part of the party, to be invited in, not to have to scream out, "Unclean, but clean," but to say, "Glory to God, I am clean." No longer would they be untouchable, because you couldn't touch them. Not normally. Undesirable people on the fringes of society. Do some of you today feel like you're undesirable? Have you grown up being told, maybe verbally, maybe not, that no one wants you, that you don't really matter all that much? There's nothing that a person that has experienced that all their life wants than just to be loved, just to be touched, just to be known, just to be desired. And that was the cry of these lepers. Behind the cry of unclean, unclean, was this deep need to be touched, to be loved, to be a part of the group, not to live outside the camp, not to worship in this little small room, but to actually be where the people are. And so these were people that lived on the fringes of society, the unwanted, the abandoned. There was nothing they could want more than to just be included, just to be citizens. And for that, they needed what you and I all need. They needed mercy. You see, a leper can't heal himself. The only thing that a leper can do is acknowledge that he or she is sick. And they did that all day long. Unclean, unclean. Every time they say that is an acknowledgement that they are sick. But you know that God has a way of meeting people where they are, does he not? And it's called the incarnation. That God so loved us that he himself became what he was not so that we could become by grace what he is, restored to God, the relationship restored, the illness is gone, the status changed, and that's all a result of God coming to meet us. You see, the text says that these men met Jesus, but I like to think about it that the only way they could meet Jesus is if Jesus came to meet them. And that's exactly what Jesus does. A leper that's sick can't bridge the gap between he or she and God. But thanks be to God that in his mercy, God bridges the distance and he comes to be met. And so these men meet Jesus. And once again, the encounter is only possible because God bridges the distance to come and meet people where they are, in their brokenness, in their sin, in their suffering, in their abandonment. God comes to meet us. And so the text says that these men met Jesus. And in order to be healed, I can think of only two things that everybody needs to do. The first is to come as you are. You can't but come as you are. The second step is to ask God to change you. So there's a two-part process to healing. One is to come just as you are. And these lepers come, unclean, unclean. But that doesn't stop them from coming because Jesus is the one that has the mercy to transform them from unclean to clean. And the last time I checked, people don't heal themselves before going to the doctor. Try going to Frederick. Or try going to Ken's Chiropractic and all your joints being fine. Ken's going to wonder, well, what are you doing here? The hospital is for people that are sick. You don't try to fix yourself and then go to the hospital. You go to the hospital because the doctor is the one that's supposed to be able to fix you. Hear this and hear this clearly. Hell is filled with people who refuse to come to God as they are. They think that they are not good enough, so they need to become good enough so that God can cleanse them. But that's not how it works. We come as we are, just as I am, the song says, to be cleansed. And if you, in your walk, realize that you are wrestling with something that is beyond your ability, you see, the thing about leprosy is it really is a visible depiction of what sin is for each one of us outside of Christ. All of us can scream out, unclean, unclean. And we're separated by distance from God. But God comes to meet us. And in order to be healed, the only thing that we can do is to come to God and say, God, this is who I am. If I'm addicted, I'm going to come as an addict. If I struggle with anger, I'm going to come with my struggles of anger. And the only thing that I can do, that you and I can do with our brokenness, is not try to disguise it, but to acknowledge our condition. Because each one of us, apart from Christ, can only cry out, unclean, unclean. But thanks be to God that he loved us enough to come and meet us. And when we come and we meet him and we cry out and come as we are and scream out, Lord, have pity on me. That's when transformation happens. So you and I better know how to come. And Christian, you better know how to keep coming. Because who in their life doesn't need more of Jesus? What weak is there that I don't need to cry out, Lord, have mercy on me? Who can help me be better? Who can help me be stronger? Who can do what I can't do and change myself but you, God? And so I come and I acknowledge it and I bow down and I say, Lord, have mercy on me. You know, the lepers say that, but they lump it together and they say, have mercy on us. Isn't it interesting that people that normally have nothing to do with one another, Jews and Samaritans, hated one another? But leprosy brings them together. And you have, as Jesus is rolling down onto Jerusalem, and he's rolling on down to Jerusalem, Luke says, this is important in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 9, verses 51 through chapter 19 and verse 44, Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem, and he's on his way to Jerusalem to die, and he is committed to it. And Luke will say that over and over again, Jesus resolutely sets his face out for Jerusalem. Chapter 13 and verse 33, I must go on today and tomorrow and the next day, for certainly no prophet can die outside of Jerusalem. Chapter 18, verses 31 to 33, he tells his disciples, we are going up to Jerusalem, and the Son of Man will be mocked and crucified and spat on and ridiculed. And so on this way to Jerusalem, Jesus is passing through the border of Samaria and Galilee. Here's Galilee. Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem. So Galilee is here, Jerusalem is here. In between Galilee and Jerusalem is Samaria. And so Jesus is walking down this border, maybe north to south, maybe east to west. And that alerts us to something, because Jews and Samaritans hate each other. They can't stand one another. They had rivaling temples. They went to war with one another. They used to be a part of the same group, the 12 tribes of Israel, but they separated. The kingdom in the north had 10 tribes. The kingdom in the south had 2 tribes, Samaria in the north, Jerusalem, the capital, in the south, and they started going to war. The Samaritans introduced idolatry. When the Jews wanted to rebuild their temple, the Samaritans tried to stop them. And so they had this rivalry going on, to the point where Jesus, when he goes to hear a Samaritan woman, John will say that Jews and Samaritans, they don't have anything to do with one another. Why is it that you are asking me for a drink? This is the kind of animosity that Jews and Samaritans have toward one another. It's a centuries-old rivalry. And so when Luke says that Jesus is passing through Samaria and Galilee, it alerts us to the possibility that maybe a Samaritan is going to appear in this story. And if you think about the people that can't stand one another today, maybe you could think about sometimes some Democrats and some Republicans. I want to read an article about what Nancy Pelosi thinks about Kevin McCarthy and vice versa, and how much conversation that they have. I'm sure there's blame to be had on both sides, but there is normally, there is hostility. Is this group is the Republicans, this group is the Democrats, and to side or to have conversation with the other group or to actually consider what the other group is saying, you might be labeled a traitor. That's kind of like this relationship between Jews and Samaritans. But you know, the good thing that Luke gets across in his gospel is that the things that divide us are not greater than the things which unite us. Now, that sounds like cliche, and here's what I mean by that. We can be divided by skin color. We can be divided by gender. We can be divided by class. But what unites every single person in Luke is the fact that we're separated from God because of our sin, and all we can do is cry out unclean. And when we realize that God comes to open up the door so that all people, rich, poor, black, white, Asian, Republican, Democrat, all have something in common, we all need Jesus. We all have sin. And what Jesus comes to show us, and what Luke makes clear in his gospel, is that the gospel is universally for everyone, and everybody needs to hear it. So once again, getting back to the story, the first step in healing is to come as you are. The second step is to ask God to change you. But notice something about verse 14. Why didn't Jesus heal them on the spot? Isn't that what you might expect him to do? Lepers come up to Jesus, and why doesn't he just make a pronouncement, be clean, or touch them, and then send them to the priest? That's what he does in Luke chapter 5, verses 12 to 14. Some lepers come up. They want to be healed, and Jesus reaches out his hand and touches the untouchable. Well, why doesn't Jesus do that here? What does he do? Verse 14, when Jesus saw the lepers, he said, "Go, show yourselves to the priest." Kind of surprising, isn't it? Why does Jesus do that? Well, I don't really know. I don't think the story really conveys. What I do know is this. You only showed yourself to the priest if you were healed. So going to the priest meant that they would be healed sometime between here, Jesus, and the priest. Hear this. Some people can't start moving unless they sit down and calculate. Everything has got to line up perfectly. Well, why doesn't Jesus touch me to be healed? Why doesn't he just pronounce? There are some people that will never get going, even though they have a clear command to go, because things just don't make sense to them. But what if God tells you to go? And where he tells you to go is 5 miles away, and it'll take you 10 days to get there. Or let's say the journey between these lepers and the priest will take them 3 days. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, and Jesus says, "Go show yourself to the priest." And what if it's God's will that by faith these men won't be healed until they get to day 3? Now, what if those lepers start to go? They get to 1 mile and they say, "Well, I'm still not healed." And they start to get to mile 2, and they're still not healed, and they just assume that, well, God told me something, and it's not true. It could be in your life that when God tells you to go, you may have to go into a certain distance that is further than you might want to travel. But if you have the command from God to go, that's all you need to continue the journey to keep going into healing. See, our job is to do what he tells us to do when he tells us to do it. Notice that these men, verse 14 says, as they went, they were cleansed. It doesn't say on what mile, it doesn't say on what point. It says that Jesus told them to go, and they were not healed until they started moving. There are some people that will hear what God says, and they'll start going and they won't complete the journey, or they'll get tired of walking and they won't get to the point where God will bring about what he says, because they just get too tired and they start to doubt God. Don't let that be you, and don't let that be me. If you've got a clear command from God that says go, then you have to have the faith to keep going until God brings about what he said. And evidently, these lepers had the kind of faith that was needed to get them as far as they needed to be until their healing happened. Now, sometimes in your life, when God tells you to do something, when you have a clear command from God that says, go, there's going to be obstacles that will arise and cause you to question whether you should keep going or not. But if you have spent time discerning the voice of God, and if you clearly have a word from God, then you need to do what he says until he brings about what he promised you. Don't get tired on mile 3 when you've got to go to mile 10. What encourages you to keep going is the fact that you have a command from God that tells you to go. And that's all you need to get you through the what ifs and the whens and the so forth. So when those unforeseen obstacles arise and cause you to question, you've got to remember the definitive word that the Lord has spoken to you. Now, sometimes God tells you to go, does he not? But sometimes God doesn't tell you to go. Sometimes God will tell you to stay. And sometimes it's hard to stay. Sometimes God might tell you to be still, and you just want to keep on moving. And God says, you're doing too much. You just need to be still, and you need to listen. Because it's in times where we spend listening to God that we can clearly discern what he says. So many people spend so much time telling God things in their prayers that they don't know what he says because they don't spend any time listening. But when these men come up to Jesus, they say, he's the master. They say, Jesus, master, have pity on us. We are the servants in this relationship. We don't tell God what to do. God tells us what to do. And if we want to hear what he says, we've got to spend some time on our knees, not just talking, but sometimes listening. And it might be that you emerge up from your knees and God says, don't move. You need to be still. Sometimes God will tell you, you need to stop doing that. You need to quit that. And it might be something that your flesh loves, but God says it's hindering you in your relationship with me. And you got to give it up. Stop that. What if God's word for you is to endure just a little bit longer? And you wanted to escape from this situation, but God says, endure. I'm working on you. And this is a process. You can't give up on mile 2. God says, endure, and he'll give you all you need to endure. What if God tells you that person that gets on your nerves, you need to forgive them? What if God tells you, fight? Not physically, but you need to keep battling. What if the word that God has is confess? You're hiding things, and you're not healed because you've been hiding things. It's time to come out into the open, and you need to confess. And until you do that, hard as it may be, you can't experience the freedom that I want to give to you because you're not being obedient to the word that I've given to you. Now, there are two different responses to grace in the text. There's a proper response and there's an improper response. And this gets back to the heart of the sermon, why it's entitled Grace with/Without Gratitude. Because those are the two responses to what God has done. There is a response to grace that is gracious and a heart full of thanksgiving, and then there is ungratefulness. Let me read to you the remaining section of Luke one more time. When he saw them, he said, go show yourselves to the priests. And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back. Now, what do you do if you're a leper and all your life you've been crying out, unclean, unclean? Jesus has told you to go. You start walking by faith and immediately you're cleansed. What's your first response? It should be to turn back around and tell God, thank you. But only one person does that, and it just happens to be the person that the Jews really don't care about all that much, the Samaritan. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, "Were not all 10 cleansed?" You see, the expectation that Jesus has from people that have received grace and healing is that they would respond to God in gratitude. That's the expectation. That's why Jesus can say, "Were not all 10 healed? Where are the 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner?" Then he said to him, "Rise and go. Your faith has made you well." Do you see that everything up until verse 14 is the same for these men? They all have leprosy. They all ask for mercy. They're all healed. The difference is their response to the healing is different. 9 of the lepers are more excited about the healing than the healer. You know, Tiffany Trump got married recently. Do you know how much her ring cost? Like $2.5 million. Yeah, that's all. I'm ashamed to say, compared to that, how much I paid for April's wedding ring. I only paid $200,000. Minus $199,000. But there are people that can fall more in love with the gift than the giver. And these 9 men knew that they needed Jesus until he healed them. And then they didn't need him anymore. But they'd probably come back if they got leprosy again. If they got leprosy again, they'd know where to go. But you see how we too can get more excited about what God gives to us than God himself. And these men all start off, and they have the faith to believe that Jesus can heal them. Otherwise, they wouldn't have stopped. They wouldn't have started moving. But the problem is, they didn't continue on with Jesus. They didn't have true faith. They said master, and that's a word that Luke uses in other places for disciples. Disciples will call their teacher master. And these men seem like they are acknowledging Jesus as one that they want to follow. But they start off initially, and they start on the journey, but then they leave Jesus and they don't continue on with him anymore. They don't return to worship. They don't return to pray. They don't stop to consider all of the blessings. God has given me my life back. And instead of returning and giving him glory, I'm just going to continue on and go all about my business. Church, how can we look at what God has done for us and not return every day and tell him thank you? At times we might have the tendency to forget God in times of blessing and to question God during times of trial, but the Samaritan has the proper response to God's mercy. Once again, one of them, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. Do you see the transformation in the text? Before he was cleansed, what did he do? He came with a loud voice of desperation to the one that could heal him, acknowledged who he was, said, "Lord, have pity on me." All day long before this, he screamed out, "Unclean, unclean," at the loud voice. But you see that an experience of deep grace leads to deep transformation, and it impacted his praise. Because with that same loud voice, he came back, no longer crying out, "Patty, unclean, unclean." But he came back with that same loud voice, praising God. Deep transformation leads to deep worship. And I hope you see, too, the distance factor has changed. You notice in verse 12, the lepers are crying out at a distance because they're not supposed to be near. But the distance is gone when this guy comes back. He's praising in a loud voice at the feet of Jesus. Before, he couldn't come near because he had leprosy, but now it's gone, and he can come into the presence of Jesus, and all he knows is to bow down at his feet. Has that been you? Have you come just as you are, warts and all, and asked for God to cleanse you, to cry out, "Lord, have mercy on me"? It's easy to fall more in love with the gift than the giver. But the Samaritan man was excited about the gift, but he was more excited about the giver. Now, Tiffany Trump's husband might have bought a $3.5 million ring. And that may or may not be a sign of love. We not? You know, people that have bought expensive stuff for their spouses and their marriages don't last all that long. It may or may not be indicative of the amount of love one person has for another. But when God comes to give, God doesn't give us a $3.5 million ring. God gives himself. God lays down his life for you and I. And what can we give to a God like that but to come back every week and give God some glory and to spend some time at his feet and give God some praise? Because people that are sinners know that all week long they cried out, "Unclean, unclean," until Jesus came to meet us. And when we came as we are, and we laid ourselves out there and say, "Lord, have pity on me," transformation happens. I want to leave you with a little bit of application about ways that we can cultivate a grateful heart. One way is to spend some time reflecting on the gospel. If you spend some time reflecting on the gospel, the fact that God has sent his very best to be mocked, to be crucified, to be insulted, to take upon himself all of the sufferings, all of the abandonment, everything that has to do with sin, he took upon himself so that he could heal us. And he broke forth out of that grave, and he rose again to offer us new life. If you reflect on that every day this week, then it ought to impact our worship. Amen? We ought to be able to come in here giving praise to God out of the overflow of what God has done. We don't need anybody to produce something in us. The gospel has done all that for us. We arrive here with hearts filled with thanksgiving. And if we reflect on the gospel on a regular basis, we come here ready to worship. What kind of singing do you think a person will do if they've been reflecting on the gospel? Do you think they'll sing like this? "There's a call come ringing o'er the restless waves, send the light." Oh, don't you think they would sing, "There's a call come ringing for the restless wave, send the light, send the light"? What kind of singing do you think would be produced in a heart that is filled with gratitude? He will sing, she will sing with enthusiasm. Because that person knows what God has done. And so this is an opportunity to reflect on the gospel and to allow it to transform our worship. Second is to spend some time counting your blessings. Do you know the song, "Count Your Blessings"? "When upon life's billows you are tempest-tossed, when you are discouraged, thinking all is lost, count your many blessings, name them one by one, and it will surprise you what the Lord has done. Are you ever burdened with a load of care? Does the cross seem heavy you are called to bear? Count your many blessings, every doubt will fly, and you will be singing as the days go by." So amid the conflict, whether great or small, do not be discouraged. God is over all. Count your many blessings. Angels will attend. Help and comfort give you to your journey's end. If we spend some time counting our blessings on a regular basis, it will help us to be people that are more grateful. Third is to incorporate gratitude-focused prayers in our lives. There are two big parts to prayer. One is to petition, to ask God for things. Another big part of prayer is to thank him. If I spend all of my time petitioning God for things, but I never thank him, it could lead me to have a heart that is not very grateful. But if you spend just one prayer, just spend a whole prayer a day telling God thank you for all of the things that he has given to you and the life that you have in Christ Jesus, that's a way to cultivate gratitude in our lives. You know that grateful people are able to be gracious to others. The next time you get upset with someone, whether it be a coworker, whether it be a spouse, whether it be a friend, I want you to do this. I want you to think about something that you're grateful for that person for, and then respond. Now, that's going to be really hard, especially when people make you angry. But try to find something that you are grateful for this person for, and allow that to dictate how you respond to that person. Now, I know what you're saying. What if I can't find anything to be thankful for about that person? Here's what you do. Think about how grateful you are to receive, to be on the receiving end of God's mercy. And then give that person perhaps the grace they don't deserve. Because when you are overflowing with gratitude that you feel toward God, it can spill over even to people that may not deserve it. And you and I can be Jesus in this story, because there are some people that are coming as they are, and they won't be transformed unless you give them not what they deserve, but what they need. And some people need a little bit of mercy. There are going to be people that are put in your pathway that are going to be transformed by the grateful attitude that you respond to them with when they come as they are, and you respond to them when they don't deserve it with gratitude. What word is God telling you today? For these lepers, it was go. Go, and then you'll be here. What is he telling you? It could be different for different people in different places. Is he telling you to endure and you need some help with that? Is he telling you to let go and you are struggling with that? Is he telling you to be grateful and you're wrestling with that? Well, come and let us pray with you. Help you to follow this word. Perhaps God is calling you today to heal, to be healed. And you, like this leper, need to come as you are and just to stand before God and to say, Lord, have mercy. That is exactly what happens in baptism. It's a petition to God for mercy. In order for you to begin this journey, you must come to Jesus. Without him, you are a diseased person in desperate need of healing. I encourage you to come, to cast off your pride, lay down at the feet of Jesus, and cry out for mercy. If you believe that he is who he says he is, then obey him in baptism this morning and experience the joy of salvation. But whatever the word is that God has for you, why don't you come and we'll assist you as we stand and as we sing together.